everybody, and welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown. And we have a really great guest with us today. Her name is Meredith Ponadell, and she wrote a book. I guess we'd call it a co-written book because a lot was written by her aunt, and it's called About Face, A Life and Times, The Life and Times of Dottie Ponadell, Makeup Artist to the Stars. And welcome, Meredith, and thank you so much for getting up so early to do this. She's in California. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, no problem. I show dogs. It's one of the things I do. And when I show dogs and have dog shows to go to, I have to get up early in the morning. But I also have a lot of critters, so every now and then I have to get up early anyway. So as soon as I wake up, I'll let you know.
Are you drinking coffee? I'm having my tea, but
no.
I've been awake for hours. No coffee?
No. No coffee. I also work two jobs. So after I go to my first job late in the afternoon, I go to my second job. And if I started drinking coffee now, I'd never make it through the day.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No, doesn't. The only thing that really gets me going, instead of coffee, which is really weird, is a can of Coca-Cola.
Oh.
If I drink a can of regular Coca-Cola, I will be off the wall.
Wow.
I try to stay away from it. Yeah.
But you know what's good? They have these like mini cans that are 8 ounces, and that's what I get because
I
don't get the diet stuff. I get the real stuff. And if I need like a midday pickup, I'll slam one of those, and they're perfect. Okay, so enough about our morning caffeine habits. doing all your jobs and you're showing dogs, which is sort of like your aunt. You know, you get them glamored up and you do all that stuff.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I tell people I do to dogs what my aunt did to people.
Yeah.
My clients are easier to work with.
I can imagine, but you don't get the gifts.
That's true. You get different kinds of gifts.
Oh, the licks and the love. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and the stuff you have to throw in the trash can in the morning, but that's okay.
That's okay. They love us. They're so wonderful. And what beats
that's
them?
That's true.
Okay. So let's start. I think we'll just go by chapter and talk about Dottie. And in your acknowledgments, you discuss when you were 5 years old. Want to tell us that story?
Well, I moved in with Dot when probably I was closer to four, between three and a half and four. And at some point when I was about five, and one of my wanderings around the house and looking through things, because I had absolutely no compunction about opening drawers and doors and cupboards.
Who did at five?
And I still do. I still do. So if I visit you...
Okay, I'll know to lock away and hide whatever I don't
want
to
see. Right, lock everything away, because I will just open your closet and, oh, what's this?
Oh, my.
So I was exploring, and in the bar, Dottie had a built-in bar, a whole room that was a bar.
I love that.
And I found, because she did a lot of entertaining prior to getting MS and you know, being confined to the house. So I found in one of the cupboards underneath, the sink, this big old box, bigger than me, and it had a lot of pictures in it. So I decided to find out what they were. So everything in that prologue is exactly how it happened. I dragged it down the hall. I dragged it to her room. You know, Dottie, what's this? And she went through all the pictures with me, and that's kind of how it started. I mean, you know, here I was 5 years old and getting an education in not only silent actors and actresses, and yes, I still call them actresses.
I do too. I do too.
Yeah, but you know, all the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s people, you know, here it was 1959, 1960, and I wasn't into Elvis, but I was into Carol Lombard and Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Blondell and
all my faves.
Bankhead, you know, that,
all my faves.
Kind of thing.
So that's how
it started.
You looked at all the photos and they weren't like snapshots and you're like, wow, you know, because these were, you know, they're glamour shots. And
these are the big silver gelatin 8x10, 11x14 studio portraits.
Yeah. You liked Paulette Goddard a lot. She struck out.
Yes.
She stuck out to you because she looked like she was like, you know, just wonderful and shiny.
Well, she was. She was very cute, you know, and alive and perky. And you could tell all that from her photograph. And she called Dot Tinkle Bell. Tinkle was a nickname for dogs. Tinkle Bell. And so when she laughed, it sounded like Tinkle. That's what I heard a lot about Dot, that she was always up and laughing and keeping everybody in a good mood and happy and that kind of thing.
She was amazing from what I read. Just amazing.
Yeah. You know, and I've heard that from people who weren't written up in the book. I talked to Angela Lansbury, for instance, several years ago, and she said that's one of the things she remembered about Dot, was that you could always count on her to be happy and you know, up and not being down about anything. And you know, if she was on the set, things were on an even keel kind of a thing.
Which was wonderful because, you know, working with actresses and actors is sometimes not easy, especially when you're making up their puss. So they want to be gorgeous.
Exactly.
She had the confidence. But why don't we start on the first chapter here. I rolled in on the old Santa Fe.
Yes. No matter what, I knew the book had to be started that way because that's literally what Dot wanted to do. That's how she started her own, you know, when she started writing it, that's how she started it. And so I wasn't going to change that at all. I really didn't change very much, actually. Thank you to Danny Miller, who helped me put all this together, and who gets credit on the book cover as well. There were iterations of the book, let's say, where I thought maybe I should write a novel, maybe I should modernize it and take away Dot's phrasing, because when I was 15 and 16, I thought it was just terrible. And Danny said, no, you have to keep her voice and
definitely
writing it just like this. And I'm thinking, okay, fine. And of course, that's the one thing that everybody loves about the book. Not the one thing, but one of the things that people love is the fact that it's like they're looking into a 1930s movie.
The lingo. That's what classic movie fans. I'm a huge lover. And I started young because of my father loving them. And, you love the whole thing. The outfits, the looks, the lingo. So I thought it was great. So, Danny, good advice. And you, Meredith.
Thank you, Danny.
Great book.
I was at the Joel McRae and Francis D. Ranch doing a presentation a few days ago.
Oh, how cool.
During part of the presentation, I looked over at Danny, who was there watching the movie with us, and I said, thank you very much for keeping me from turning it into a novel. And everybody laughed.
It's true. I mean, it's so great. Truth is better than fiction, and it's stranger than fiction. And I'm glad you didn't make it a novel. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story. So you showed, what did you show? Is there a movie coming out about Dottie?
There was not that I know of. It's a wonderful place. It's the ranch that Joel McRae and Francis D. owned and lived on, an actual working cattle ranch. It's not now, but it was then.
Yeah.
In the Thousand Oaks area of Southern California. And that's where they lived for many, many years. And they have now, it's not owned by the state, but I believe it's owned by the city or the area of Camarillo. And it's a public place, you know. And they show the old movies, Joel's and Francis's, and they have tours of the ranch.
How
and
cool.
The old buildings. And it's wonderful there. It's just wonderful. And you can really, you stand there and you go in there and you see all the artifacts and the pictures and where they lived, and you really, really get a taste for what it was like in, you know, 1935 and 1940 when there was nothing else around and they lived on 3,000 acres.
Wow, 3,000 acres.
A working ranch. And, you know, before the roads came in and what this part of California was like. And so it's really fantastic. So we were there watching a wonderful movie that Francis made called Finishing School.
I love that.
It had been shown during TCM Film Festival this past April, and it had been so incredibly popular that people were getting turned away from the showing.
Wow.
They couldn't accommodate everyone who wanted to see it. They even had a midnight showing at one of the small theaters.
Wow.
And I was one of them. I could not get in. you were waiting in line for hours and you just couldn't get in. There were too many people. So they showed it there, and they had called me a couple of months ago out of the blue. They heard about me. They read the book. Would I like to come and talk a little bit about Dot and the movie and blah, blah, blah? And I said, sure, I'd love to. So it's great.
It must have been fun.
Oh, yes, and it was. I loved it. I got to play with the horses, and I got to milk a cow. I loved it. I had a ball.
We were talking before we started taping about how we both love animals, and we would love to have, you know, if we won the Powerball, which, believe it or not, neither of us did. I'm shocked.
I had it all planned out.
Yeah, but we both are humongous lovers of animals, so we were just talking about that. That movie was great. I liked that movie a lot. Ginger Rogers was in it, and it was pre-code.
What a cast. Beulah Bondi.
Yes.
Everybody else.
Billy Burke.
Out of my head right now.
Billy
Burke. My God, how could I forget? I mean, 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
It's just amazing.
It was great. And, you know, it was pre-code because she got pregnant and she was not married. Ugh. And it was
You never really knew because they didn't mention the word pregnant.
No, but you got the idea. The place. It was great. Oh, the actor, Bruce Bennett. Yeah, he played.
And Talbot? Bruce Cabot.
Bruce Cabot, that's who it is. Yes.
Oh, he was cute.
He was cute. He was very cute.
He was really cute. And he was honorable, which actually makes a big difference.
He was very honorable. He was a good boy in that because he has played very bad boys. And I've read some really juicy stuff about him, too. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we'll get into, she rolled into Old Santa Fe. So she moved to California at what age, why, and where from?
It was about 1920, and Dot was born in 1898. So she was 21, 22 years old, depending on when they got here. I think it was in the summer of 1920. Health reasons. Her father had died. She was basically the sole support of her mother, and her two younger brothers. They weren't that much younger, but they were enough younger that they didn't do quite as much as Dot did. Dot was just a natural caretaker. You know, if she had family or friends to take care of, it didn't matter who else was doing whatever, she would step in and take over and do it. But she had been working in a basement in a department store, which I could never figure out when I was a kid why it was so bad, because, of course, 1960 basements were totally different from 1918 basements.
What were they like?
And, well, there was no air conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
She was wrapping gifts and wrapping packages and working in the basement of a Boston store in Chicago. And she had asthma-type problems and allergies and things that were going on. And it was damp. And her doctor finally said, you need to get to a warmer climate. So it was like a light went off above their heads, right? You know, we'll go to California.
Yay.
So they came. Yay. Yes. So they came out to California, and the rest is history.
She rolled into Old Santa Fe. So they had a bakery, right? That was their money-making thing at the time when they first rolled in there.
Right. They had gotten a franchise, I guess it was, to a Vandy Camp's bakery. And they had used the last of their savings because they really wanted to get this, and they got it. And, you know, Dot writes about how she would love getting up early in the morning. They lived right across the street from what was then called Westlake Park, which is now called MacArthur Park. Mm-hmm. And the bakery was across the street on one side from MacArthur Park, and they lived on the other side. And Dot used to love walking through the park at, you know, 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning, with the stars out and the orange trees, which they still had back then. And as she writes, there was no smog, there was no this, there was no that. It was clean and fresh and bright, and she just loved it. And she was definitely an early morning person, unlike her niece, who could sleep in bed all day.
I'm with Dot. I'm up no matter what time.
Yeah.
So they did that. How did Dot get into the movie industry from being a kid from Chicago and working in a basement in a bakery, and then movies.
Well, as Dot tells it, and I'm starting to have a slightly different idea here, but as Dot tells it, she was working one day, and one of the people that she had, one of the customers that she would sell donuts and rolls and things to, was, as she told it, a little native girl from the islands. So maybe she was from, I don't know where she was from. But anyway, she was going off to an audition. And would Dot like to come? Well, actually, she got in before that. She had met some people who were shooting something at some point. And they asked Dot, you know, you're kind of cute. You know, she was 22.
She was, she was cute.
Dark and cute. And yeah, she was cute. And she was stacked, put it that way. And I think they found that rather attractive.
Yes, I think
and
that goes a long
way. Would you like
way.
To make... Would you like to make the whopping sum of you know, $3.50 or $5 a day? And all you have to do is walk back and forth in front of the camera. You know, she was to be an extra. And that was a lot of money back in 1920, 1921. You know, $5 for a whole day's work. Wow.
What do you think that is now?
They were probably paying, I forgot how much, but $10 or $12 a week for their apartment.
Wow.
So, you know,
oh my God.
Bucks. Wow. So she said sure, and she did that. And then when a few days later, when her customer, the little native girl, as she calls it, came in and asked her to go with her to an audition, would you like to go with me? Dot said sure, why not? And Dot ended up getting the job.
Did the little native girl get it? No.
Not according to Dot, no. They wanted, Dot was fearless. If they asked her, can you do this? Sure, I can do this. You know, never done it before, but yeah, I can do it. And she had great rhythm. She liked to dance. And according to Dot, she became a big, fat dancing double for all sorts of people, including Mabel Normand and other people, you know.
Big 20s stars.
Yeah, she just went out and did it, you know. When she was asked by a director of one of the Westerns she was in, hey, can you ride a horse? She said, sure, I can ride a horse. Never been on a horse in her life. But that didn't stop her. She got on the damn horse, and there she was, you know. And then that was when she played in several movies. She played a character called Little Wolf, an Indian.
I saw that.
And yes, I'm not using Native American because Indian is the term I grew up with, and that's what I'm using.
Uh-huh.
And as I tell my friends, the only Native Americans are opossums because everybody came from somewhere else.
True.
So even the Native Americans. So anyway, she played Little Wolf in several Bob Custer movies. He was a silent actor, and she was in a bunch of different silent movies. I have all her stills. Luckily, her mother, who was my grandmother, had the foresight to keep everything, and I have, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 different stills of not only the Westerns, but the dancing and the different costumes she wore. And who was she? Oh, my God. She was in Torrent with Greta Garbo. She was dancing in that one. She was in a rather famous Fox movie made in 26 called Sandy, which I think its claim to fame is that it was the first six-reel silent at the time. It was, you know, everything was like one and two reels because they were only 20, 30 minutes long, and Sandy was quite a bit longer. So she was in that, and I have the stills from that. People like Dorothy Sebastian, she was in a movie with Myrna Loy, a silent movie that Myrna Loy made.
I love Myrna Loy. The name seems very familiar to me, Dorothy Sebastian. I'm sure I've seen her.
She was another fairly well-known silent actress. I can't think of the guy's name. Oh, well, not well, she was in something with Art Accord, Hoot Gibson. She knew all them.
Rudolph Valentino.
She does write that she was in, I think, she was an extra, of course, of, it was either the Four Horsemen or the Sheik. I forget which. but or maybe both.
I think
she did some things for Chaplin. Yeah, she worked in the Chaplin studio. She worked over at Clara Kimball Young at the studios in Edendale back then when it was Edendale. Now it's Glendale and that whole area. Actually, it's things been turned into Dodger Stadium. So a lot of where she worked has been, of course, demolished and built up upon. But that's one of the charming parts about her story is you read all these things about the way it was back then. And she writes about the pepper trees all up and down Prospect Avenue, which is now Hollywood Boulevard. But she loved nature. So when they cut down all the trees, she was sad, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's progress, but...
Is it, I get it.
Yeah. Well, right, exactly. Is it progress? But Dot loved the orange blossoms and the bean fields and the roses that grew wild in the streets and the you know, that kind of thing. She just loved it.
It was idyllic.
I do, too.
Yeah. That's why so many people wanted to move there.
I grew up with that too, and I remember spending hours and hours in the front yard and the backyard with her because she was like a plant whisperer, you know. She would grow and she loved planting and growing and taking care of her plants.
She's nurture all the way, total nurture.
Yeah, and she taught me to do that too. You know, she firmly believed that plants. Not that they talk to you, but they do communicate, and
yes.
they understand when you care about them, and they will respond by growing for you.
I agree with you.
Yes, and so she, and unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, I have the same touch that she did, which is why I have so many damn potted plants all over the place. People give me, something will be dying in someone's house. I'll go, give it to me. It'll grow. And it does. I can take a stick and the damn thing will sprout roots and grow.
I need you here.
And then I can't throw them out. You know,
yeah.
If they get in my way or whatever, I feel sorry for them.
So
growing in my yard that you know, and squirrels will come and put things in the pots and I have peanut plants and
how
bean
cute.
Things growing out of it's ridiculous. But anyway, so I definitely have that in common with Dot.
So she was just like, she had never taken dancing, but she became like the go-to dance chick for doubles,
right.
Wasn't she?
Right. Yes, she was. She was. She had a lot of energy. As I said before, she was pretty much fearless. Can you do this? Sure, I can do this. Can you get on top of it? Sure, I can do that. Can you get underneath? Sure, not a problem. You know. Well, it was important, too. She had other family that she wanted to help out. She came out here with her mother.
Yeah.
Her two brothers were still in Chicago. So as soon as she made enough money, she sent for them. Gradually, as she got a toehold in the silent movies, and made a little more money and you know, was able to do more. She sent for various cousins and aunts and uncles, you know, come on out to California, I'll help you out. You
what
know,
a sweetie. What a sweetie.
And she did. And then even when she started working, doing makeup, when she did start making better money, she definitely would give these relatives of hers a stake, you know, when they came out here to help them out. So she felt very strongly about taking care of family.
And nature and everything. She's cool.
Yeah, and she helped them out. And she, of course, had to provide for her mother and her brothers. And you know, I mean, by our standards, obviously things were relatively cheap back then.
Yeah.
But when you were living it, you know, it was like it is at any other time. You have to take care of yourself and the people in your family. And it takes money and it takes a lot of work. And Dot was not afraid of hard work.
Okay, Meredith, why don't you get us into now, this is what made Dottie so famous and so much to know about, how she became this wonderful makeup artist to the stars.
Well, she had an eye for color and harmony in how things looked and relationships to shadows and light. She just had an eye for things like that. And one day when she was on the set of actually it was Follow Through, a movie with Nancy Carroll and Jack Haley. And I believe it was a musical, and I believe it was the first all-color musical. It has some distinction right now, besides the fact that my aunt did the makeup. And I forgot what that other distinction was. But anyway, she was on the set. They were having trouble getting a scene lit properly for Nancy Carroll. And Dot, being Dot, she just decided to speak up from the hot sidelines. You know, why don't you do this? And here she is, this little nothing extra. I think you should do this, blah, 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 you know. And they're looking at her, and Nancy Carroll said, come on up and try it, you know. And so Dot went up and took whatever makeup they had at the time, and she redid Nancy Carroll's makeup, and it worked. And she looked fine for the scene, and the cinematographer was able to get the shot, whereas it wasn't working quite properly before. So Nancy Carroll said, I want this little girl to do my makeup. And the production people said, can't do that. She's a woman.
Yes, first of all, which is odd.
She's not a makeup artist. She's not one of our men. She's, you know, she can't do that. And Nancy Carroll said, okie dokie, I'm going to do my own makeup. And she proceeded to purposely screw it up. So they couldn't get any of the shots the next day. They couldn't, you know, they would do the scenes, and she looked like crap. And so then Nancy goes, well, why did you hire that little girl that I wanted you to hire yesterday? Okay, you know, this was a major movie at this point in time. This was not a little throwaway, whatever.
Yeah, a little still or so, 20 minutes or something.
Ironically enough, of course, with Jack Haley in it, which was amazing. Because, of course, later Dot's association with Judy Garland. Anyway, they hired Dot, and the rest was history. You know, Dot took her craft very seriously. She knew she didn't have the experience that the more established makeup people did at that point in time. And there weren't that many of them in 1929, but the Westmores were coming up strong. And so she taught herself. She would go to bookstores, she would go to museums and study artwork, and looked at the different paintings, especially of the masters. And right now all the names were totally out of my head. It's 6:15 in the morning. Rembrandt and whoever else there was at the point. I can't even think. But anyway, she would study
the masters.
The paintings. She would study their paintings, and especially light and shadow and how they were used. I remember when I was about 7, one of my cousins gave me an art book. This big, huge, beautiful book. Very heavy. I could barely lift it. And I remember taking it into Dot's room one day and having her go over it with me, you know, read the captions, because I couldn't read everything. And to my amazement, she knew the painting. She knew the artist. The book was called Pantheon Story of Art. It was, to me, it was very big. And this is a Rembrandt, and this is a Van Gogh, and this is a blah, blah, blah. And I was amazed, you know, how did you know that? And she would show me, you see this? You see how his nose is sticking out because the light's over here? Or you see how you can't see the eyes on this woman because the light's over there and the shadow's over? I was fascinated, you know, but that's exactly how she learned her craft.
And it's funny, you know, because it's like she was sort of just a genius, a natural at that. Who sees that? She was truly an artist, which I do believe artists and all those people are.
She knew she had to do it. She was in an extremely competitive field. She was the only woman
Amazing.
Doing any of this. And she knew if she wanted to keep at it, and she could sense that there was an opening there for her that there wouldn't have been as a dancer, an extra, or even as an actress.
Right.
You know, she wasn't getting major parts. They definitely knew who she was back there, and they would use her for different things. But she wasn't getting the huge starring roles. Although she was on a couple of the lobby cards, that was nice, you know, in some of the classic movies. But I think she could sense that she could do something with this. And she fought like hell to do it and to succeed.
Okay, let's talk about some of the amazing people she made up and her friendships with them. One of the first I think you discuss is Marlene Dietrich.
Yes.
And she loved her. Both.
She adored Marlena. Dot enjoyed people. She was one of these totally optimistic types, which was really depressing when I was a teenager.
I bet. But
here I am. Oh, the world sucks.
Yeah. No, leave me alone.
But she always saw the best in everyone. Mm-hmm. And most everyone. There was a couple of clinkers in the bunch, but I'm not going to talk
sure.
about those. But anyway, she apparently her... she had continued from 1929, 1930, 1931 to work with various people. She developed somewhat of a reputation for doing a good job, obviously making these women look wonderful. And when von Sternberg heard about it and he brought Dietrich over from Germany, he, you know, who is this little lady? He heard about her. He wanted her to try her magic on Dietrich. And Dot met her, and she started working with her, and Dietrich loved the look and how she, you know, appeared on screen. And that was the beginning of Dot working at Paramount, getting a contract. I think she said, what was it, a 10-year contract?
Wow.
Options, which was, like, unheard of back then, you know.
No wonder the men hated her guts. They were jealous.
Dietrich,
yeah.
Between Dietrich and Mae West and Lombard and everybody else she worked with there, she stuck with them. you know, Frances D, who was there, Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, Tallulah.
You know, when you have people like, when you have people like Bankhead and Lombard and Mae West and Dietrich saying, you know, this is who we want, they got it.
It's so one of the things about Dietrich, which was wonderful, your aunt had kind of a clunky car, and then one morning someone said, let's go.
Yeah, she had an old, I don't remember what it was. It must have been a Ford. I actually have a photograph of it somewhere. I have a photograph of Dot in one of her Indian costumes next to the car. But one day she was, I guess, taking Dietrich somewhere, and Dietrich got in. Again, this was very early 30s. And being an old car, it had various issues with the springs in the seats. And mm-hmm. Dietrich's rear end got poked by something coming out of the seat. And Dietrich said, well, we have to fix this. And the next morning, there was a brand new car on the lot.
Amazing.
She cried. She couldn't believe it. And Dietrich said, if I thought you were going to cry, I wouldn't have done it.
But how nice. You know, that was such a beautiful thing.
Dot adored Dietrich. She loved Dietrich. She was such a kind, giving person. You know, Dietrich was another nurturer. They had a simpatico relationship that way. Dietrich, if somebody needed something, if somebody was sick, she would make sure that they were taken care of. When Dot was trying to help a cousin of hers in Chicago come out here and try to, you know, get a job for her and help her out, Dietrich said, bring her out, we'll make her my stand-in. And she did.
Yeah, what a nice thing to do. What a wonderful
thing
to do.
That was a very nice thing to do. Yeah, you know. Well, she wanted to keep Dot happy, too. They all wanted to keep Dot happy, not just because of the makeup, but because of the relationship.
They enjoyed
her. Absolutely, they enjoyed her. I have to turn off my Bluetooth, but I'm going to go to the regular phone because I'm being told it's got a low battery.
Okie dokie.
So here we are now. Anyway, they developed all the people she worked with, and not just the women, but the men, too. Gary Cooper, George Raft, Barrymore, because she worked on Costello, Dolores Costello. Gable, you know, she adored Clark Gable, but they enjoyed her company. She enjoyed theirs, and the relationships lasted for years, years and years and years. These people were her friends, not just her clients.
Which was wonderful, and you made that very clear in the book. But she also loved one actress in particular, who I adore, Carol Lombard, who tragically died. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, But Carol was in a car accident, and she had a humongous scar. Well, it was a pretty big scar, wasn't it?
It was a decent enough scar, and it was unfortunately toward the front of her face on the left side. And it, especially back then with the camera and the film speed, yes, and the lighting techniques, it showed. And Dot was able to cover it up so that it did not show. Now, a cousin of mine who worked with Dot, my great aunt, Dot's mm-hmm. aunt, who by the time I met her was an old woman, but she told me once, years after Dot had died, that she was under the impression Dot had created some kind of a special foundation and was using that. Now, Dot never told me that. I don't know if that's true or not. However, I do know from hearing stories from other people over the years that Dot was also not one to blow her own horn, so to speak. I found out things from, like I said, Angela Lansbury, Catherine Grayson, Margaret O'Brien, things that Dot had done and had never gotten credit for, because Dot didn't really care about getting credit for it. She just wanted to get the job done.
Right.
So it's possible that Dot did come up with this, some kind of other foundation that she was using. And that was the trick. I don't know. But I do know that Dot was instrumental in taking care of that scar. And Carol, you know, wanted to use Dot, not only, again, for that reason, but just for the fact that they all got along so well.
Yeah, and she loved Carol, and Carol was bawdy. And she said that...
We all
heard about Carol. But I love her for it. I love her even more.
Carol, Dot told me a story once. A movie, and I forgot which picture it was, my dad was working on. He was also a makeup artist, and he was working on one of the pictures that Carol was doing, and all the crew had gone down to, apparently they were at the beach or at the shore of a lake or something, and on a break, the crew had all gone down to this body of water, and they were swimming and whatever they were doing, and including my father. And unbeknownst to them, Carol had snuck back to where all their clothes were, and she had taken oil of wintergreen, and which they don't use it now, but they did have it then. And she put it in, not the guys, not the women. She put it in their underwear. Just a little bit, you know. Everybody except my father. She knew damn well if she had done it to my father, Dot would have killed her. Okay. So here all these guys are coming back, and they're, you know, laughing and having a good time, and they had a nice swim, and they go back to the set, and they're pulling on their clothes and putting on their underwear, and all of a sudden they start screaming and yelling and ripping their clothes off.
What did that do? Did it make them itchy or?
It burns. Oil and wintergreen. oil of wintergreen burns. I think it was wintergreen. And
ouch.
And Carol was cracking up. And, you know, because they were running around naked.
She was cool.
They couldn't put their under. Oh, she was terrible. I mean, they loved her, but, you know. But it's funny because I said, oh, did Daddy do? And Dottie said, no, she knew better than to do it with your father.
Yeah, he's doing your makeup. Don't mess with your makeup.
But that, not only that, he was, you know, Dottie's brother. Dottie
right.
killed her. So, you know. Dot adored Carol. She, to the day that Dot died, if you could not, you could talk about Carol, of course, but if you started talking about that day and the plane crash, Dot would start to cry.
Yeah.
She just would get so upset.
Well, that was devastating. This beautiful woman in the prime of her life. It was just devastating.
And Lillian Tashman, too, Dot would get upset because Lillian Tashman died young, apparently.
Cancer.
Cancer, stomach cancer, I believe. And Dot would get upset about that because Lillian Tashman had was another one of Dot's supporters. She had, according to the newspaper articles I read, she had actually gifted Dot with a gold, and I mean gold, makeup box.
Wow.
And being a little kid when I read that at the time, Dottie, where is it? Do you still have it? No. Where is it? And Dot said Lillian had sent it to her before she died, and then, of course, she died, and Dot said she never used it.
She couldn't.
She wasn't. I said, Dottie is gold. You could have sold it for money. You know, Dot wasn't like that.
She was sentimental and loyal and loved her friends.
I actually have a piece of the wreckage of the plane.
How'd you get that?
Carol was. Somebody had contacted me after reading something about Dot years and years and years ago, and this person is I'm not sure if he's still around, is an amateur aviation forensic person. He goes to the crashes and he dissects what happened, and this kind of thing, and he's been up there many times. He actually took John Clark Gable up there, I found out. It's a very difficult site to get to, but he sent me a small piece one day, and it was like, I tend to be kind of sensitive to these things, as my aunt was. And I took one look at the thing, and I couldn't look at it. I couldn't touch it.
I couldn't.
It brought up way too much stuff.
So too much.
I put it back in its little box, and that's where it's been sitting for 15 years.
Wow.
There's still stuff up there if you can get up to that site.
Wow.
It's a very difficult site to get up to. I ended up sending this gentleman a beautiful autographed, inscribed portrait that Carol had given my aunt, because he wanted to give it to John Clark Gable.
Oh, how nice.
So I sent it to him, and he gave it to John. So if John Clark Gable, or his son, actually, Gable's grandson, is listening to this, I'd love to know if you still have the portrait and if you like it.
I'm sure they do, and I bet they would save it. Another person she worked on, and this was pre-codes, because I think this was the only time she worked there, was Helen Hayes, who was like a lady, and Dot was not really, she wasn't jokey Jackie with her. It was a whole
swearing,
different story.
No.
Right.
She felt, Helen, and I just recently discovered some newspaper articles from the time. Apparently Helen had requested, she either had requested Dot or someone suggested Dot to her, because Helen was making her first movie, The Sin of Madeleine Claudet.
She won an Oscar
for that one. I've seen. Yes. And Dot was requested to do her makeup. And I'm not saying that's why she won the Oscar, but what the heck, you know. might as well get a little thing in there.
Let's toot her horn. We're tooting.
But she signed over a wonderful portrait to Dot. I don't have it. I should have had the portraits here. Saying something to the effect of, thank you for helping me to look beautiful. You know, this kind of thing. And but Dot always felt that she couldn't act around Helen the way she could around the others. Number one, she had she respected all the people she worked with for their talent and their dedication. But Helen was different. Of course, she had a great stage career. She was a great dramatic actress.
Uh-huh.
She could also do wonderful comedy, but Dot had such great respect for her and her craft that she couldn't. She watched her language, you know. She wasn't going to say anything bad. She wasn't going to joke around the way she just did. She just didn't feel
comfortable.
This was a lady down to her toes, and Dot wasn't going to mess it up. So she was totally on her best behavior.
Well, people give you that vibe, and Dot was sensitive to that. So you know whether you can kind of go with a person or not.
Right.
And another thing I know about Helen Hayes is, and I've watched probably mostly all of it. And Helen really, I think she was prettier as she got older. She was not that attractive, and she was very small. And in her movies, they even say, I know she's not beautiful, she's not even pretty. They say that about her in a couple of the movies I've seen, one recently. And, but she did look good. I thought she looked great. But she was not your classic beauty.
She was not your classic beauty.
Unique.
But there was something arresting about her, which was, of course, reflected in her amazing acting ability.
Yes.
But you watched her. You could have her on the screen with I'm not going to mention names, but beauties of the day.
Right.
But you'd be watching Helen because there was just something deep down inside her that came out.
She had a very commanding presence. Expression.
Yeah. Absolutely. She was just wonderful.
Yes. I loved all the movies she did pre-code. And then they, I guess she stopped, but she, I thought she looked pretty, but they would mention in these movies. I'm like, why would they say that? That's just like really mean that she wasn't beautiful.
There's all sorts of craps written about, you know, why focus on that?
I don't know. She was a wonderful actress, but in the movie, I mean, actually the other actors as a part of the movie would say that she, I don't know what he sees in her. She's not even pretty. You know, that it was part of the script.
Yeah, right.
It was part of the script. Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. Well, she did okay, and she had a wonderful career. So what are you going to say about that one? Also.
Oh, she was amazing. I loved her later work, too.
Oh, I did, too.
Oh, my God. Some of the later work she did. Oh, my God. You know, when she was much, much, much older. She was, again, you watched her when she was on the screen.
She was mesmerizing. She really was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dot got that. You know, she really got it. So
she did. And I, like I said, I thought she looked very attractive. And it just bothered me that they had to put that in the movies with her. I just have to say that for a reason. I don't know, but it did happen. Also,
it's all right.
It's
I'm
okay.
Sure she got over it.
She did, because she had the last laugh. She had a wonderful career. And she was a grand dame of, she was wonderful in Anastasia. Jeez, I loved her in that and everything I've seen her
in.
Oh,
yeah.
I want to talk about Tallulah Bankhead buying Dot pantsuits.
Well, Dot needed clothes, you know. Uh-huh. And Tallulah, you know, Dot's mother was my grandmother was, well, of course, she was old-fashioned. She was born in, 1875?
Victorian era,
like
yeah.
That. So, yeah, so, you know, women don't wear pants. You can't do that. You can't, you know, she was strict and whatever. And here's Dietrich and Tallulah, you know, they're wearing pants and they're, you know, well, Dot, you're going to wear pants too. Well, I can't do that. Yes, you can. You know, it's okay. And that was a big daring thing back then, but they were so much more freeing.
Yeah.
Number one, you had a lot of pockets.
And you didn't have to wear a girdle.
Yeah, I guess. I never thought of that. But it was just more freeing, you know, especially when you're running around after this actress and after this actress and you're going from set to set and doing all this kind of thing. And they wanted to help her out by buying her some nice clothes.
That was so sweet.
So that's... Yeah.
And Dietrich basically started that trend. She looked so amazing and beautiful in pantsuits. And so
yes.
Did Tallulah.
Yeah.
And your aunt looked pretty darn cute, too. I saw pictures of her in her pantsuits.
Yeah.
So it was really,
yeah, she was
really
okay.
Cute.
She wasn't built the way they were. She wasn't tall and little willowy. She was a little shorter. She was taller than Judy, but she was, you know, she was, I think, 5'3", 5'2", 5'3", 5'4", something like that. She was a little on the plump side. She could be. Not always. You know, some of the pictures of her in the 30s, she was great. She was small. She gained a little weight as she got older. But she wasn't built like they were, so obviously the clothes were styled a little differently. But she liked them. She enjoyed them. I remember her closet. I wish I'd kept all those clothes.
Oh, I know. Boy, I would have loved
his pantsuit. They're coming. And the shoes, oh, my God, you should have seen the shoes she had. The old-fashioned, the heels, the wider, thicker heels,
yeah.
Almost like wedge shoes with the fabric. They were made out of patterned fabric, a lot of them. Oh, my God, they were gorgeous. I wish I'd kept the shoes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh well.
Yeah, well, you kept a lot of stuff. But also, she loved Paulette. Paulette Goddard's dressing room
yeah.
was sort of like the party. She always had champagne.
Yes, and Paulette, she deeply respected Paulette's business sense, her ability to make something out of nothing, you know, the kind of thing. That was her attitude. She used to try to sit me down and tell me, if you had a brain like Paulette, you'd be able to make money. You'd be able to, you know, save money kind of thing. You know, she used to tell Judy that, too, because Paulette was a great businesswoman. She knew how to get and keep her money. She wasn't extravagant with it. And she just had a good business head on her, and Dot really respected that. You know, she wasn't someone to go out and buy a bunch of garbage and waste her earnings. And Dot thought that was a great thing. And she got, of course, Paulette got magnificent gifts of jewelry from various and sundry people that admired her.
Yeah.
and Dot said she had this amazing, amazing jewelry collection. And Dot had seen, I believe, as she writes, Barbara Hutton's jewels and jewel collections from various other well-known women. And she said Paulette's topped them all. But she didn't go around flinging them in people's faces. You know, they were hers and they were put away. And
I never saw her like a flashy person.
No, she was not.
So Dot got a house, and it became sort of like a party house for a while there.
Well, it wasn't a party house the way people think of in this day and age. It was basically a place that people could go to if they needed to get away. Dot, to the day I remember having to move out of that house when I was 18, and then, of course, several years later when Dot passed away, we literally did not know where the key to the door was. It was always open, literally. The front door was hardly ever locked. The back door was never locked. And people just walked in.
And they just sort of came, and they knew they could trust her. And they just chilled. It was sort of like a hideaway, right? Sort of a hideaway for them?
Exactly. You know, when I was little, of course, there were people in and out. But when Dot was still working, she would come home and find Joan Blondell there.
Love her.
Gable. She would find Gary Cooper, a lot of her friends. People just came over and hung out, and she did have parties. I remember speaking to a cousin years and years ago who was a teenager at the time, during the 40s, and she would come over to visit with her mother. And she said, when Dot opened the door, you never knew what you were going to find. and you never knew what Dot was going to look like, because she might have a different hair color. You know, nothing wild, but she might be auburn one day and brown the next, and you know, more red highlights the week later, you know, that kind of thing, because she had access to all this.
How cool was she?
But she said the house, it was like walking into Auntie Mame's house. You just never knew who was there and what was going on, and people were swinging from the rafters. I mean, it was just crazy.
Fun. But one thing I want to say about, this is a funny story that you had in the book about Robert Taylor and Barbara Stanwyck got married, and they were madly in love.
Yes.
Yeah. Yummy. You want to tell that story? That's hysterical.
Yummy was their word for having a conjugal visit, put it that way. And it was Barbara's birthday, and Bob Taylor had arranged for a surprise party. And, of course, a surprise party is a surprise party. Well, Stanwyck didn't suspect anything, and they had a two-story house, and she decided she was going to surprise her husband when he came home with all these people that she didn't realize he was there, and she came out of the bathroom naked, and she stood over the balcony in the stairway and she goes, "Hi," and all these other people going, "Hi," surprise. She was the one that was surprised.
Yes, because she said out loud, let's do yummies.
I want some yummy.
Yeah.
And there she is, ready for her yummy. And there's like, you know, 30
hysterical.
Or 40 people down below going, okay.
She was one of my favorite actresses as well. I just love Barbara Stanwyck.
She was another one. She was another one that was a friend of Dot throughout, throughout the 60s, the 70s, she was one of the ones that stayed and would visit and call and
nice.
That kind of thing. She was amazing. She was just amazing.
You said in the book that she was incredibly generous. She just didn't, brag about it. She didn't, put it out
there. A lot of them were, that wasn't their thing. They had enough problems being famous, with all the being hounded by reporters and columnists and stuff. They didn't need to go advertise. So was Dietrich. My dad worked for Sinatra for 25 years. He was fantastic. you know, I don't care what kind of crappy rap he gets from people. Sinatra was one of the most generous people on earth.
Oh, I've
if
read that about him.
If he found out somebody needed something, he made sure they got it. You know, if you were in trouble, he helped you out. If you couldn't make your mortgage payment, you got the mortgage payment and then some. You know, if you needed food on your table, he arranged for that to happen. He was just amazing. Many of them were, you know, and it was all done quietly behind the scenes. They weren't ostentatious. They weren't obvious. They just wanted to make sure their friends were taken care of.
Yeah, I heard that about him, and I was happy to hear that about Barbara. Your aunt married once, and this is an amazingly sad story, but it's a good story.
Yes, she did get married. He was the love of her life, as she told me, and because I asked her, why didn't you get married again? Because you had boyfriends. And she, you know, she once you have someone like him, you didn't want anybody else. And he was shot down during World War II. He was a transport pilot, and I believe she somewhere in North Africa. I don't remember exactly. She told me, and I've never been able to get any information on that. But she had some clairvoyant abilities, and she told me that one night, she woke up suddenly. She had had a dream that a telegram had appeared in front of her face, one of the Army standard telegrams, we regret to inform you, blah, blah, blah. And she woke up, she saw this thing in front of her face as though it was real. And a few hours later, the doorbell rang. And it was the chaplain or whoever from the Army bearing a telegram saying, we regret to inform you. And that's how she found out that her husband had, you know, but she knew the minute the doorbell rang, she knew what was going to happen.
Well, you get those and you get the chills, but you know, I totally believe people have that because I know I have aunts. I've had premonitions myself. I had a premonition that my sister was going to die. 3 weeks later, she did. It was horrible.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But I knew it. It was awful. Anyway, so he was like the love of her life. But another story about him was Joan Blondell called her one time and said,
tell him to leave me alone. Joan also had these flashes. And I verified this talking to Joan's daughter, Ellen. Joan also had a psychic ability, if you will. And she called Dot one day. Apparently, Joan had been going through some things, and she had known Dot's husband, Ben. His name was not Mark. She had her various and sundry reasons for disguising his name in the book, but his name was Ben Grossman. And Joan was yelling at Dot, tell your husband to leave me alone. He was appearing to her in dreams, trying to get her to stop doing whatever she was doing at that point in time, which was somebody else. And so Joan called Dot, tell your husband to get off my back, blah, 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 you know. That was kind of funny.
The story that I read in the book, and I thought it was hysterical, she said, would you stop? Get your husband, talk to him, tell him to stop this. He was pulling at her arm to get her out of bed with Mike Todd because he didn't like Mike Todd.
Right,
and she said, she said, we're married now, so tell him to leave us alone.
Mike Todd was not one of her better choices.
No. Didn't he rip her off? He ripped her off.
He did things that weren't very nice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into detail, but
yeah,
he was not one of the better men she could have married. And she actually, Gable had proposed to her. Gable
really?
To marry her. Yes.
Pre-Carol.
Post-Carol.
Post-Carol? Wow.
Post-Carol. This was afterwards.
I never read that they dated. I never.
And no, you didn't.
This is a scoop,
no,
an exclusive.
And but Joan was already involved with Todd at that time, and Joan was afraid of him, and she was stuck, you know. And Dot always gave her a hard time about that. You should have just dumped him and gone with Gable, you know. And it didn't happen, unfortunately. But no, they used to use Dot's house as a rendezvous point.
Oh, I never knew. This is something. I love her. I so love Joan Blondell, and I love Clark Gable, but I never would have put the two of them together. What a scoop.
Yeah. No, they put themselves together.
Yes. Yes, which is something. Yeah.
You didn't need to put them together. They figured that one out all by themselves.
Yes, which is wonderful. And once, didn't she catch them? She caught somebody in her bed doing the yummy.
She had come in the house, and actually there was a mistake in the book. It was written as Mike Todd. It's not Mike Todd. It was Gable. Dot had come in the house, and back then, which a lot of younger people don't know, a kitchen stove was lit separately. The gas was lit separately from the light. From the flame, mm-hmm. and you had to turn on the gas and then light the flame. And apparently, what Joan had done was they lit the gas. They didn't stick around to see if the flame went on. Okay, you didn't just turn a knob back then. You had to light.
Yeah.
And so Dot walks in the house, and there's gas. I mean, you can smell gas all over the place. And she, she knew somebody was in the house because she could hear noises in the bedroom. And she just burst in the bedroom. She didn't care. It was her house, you know. And there they are. And Dot was screaming at her, "You could have blown the house up, blah, 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 blah." You know, she was so mad. She didn't care that they were busy.
Yeah, that they were making yummies. So, I think that's a great, great word now. It's going to be one of my words for sex. Yum, yummy. We're at an hour, and we did not get to the major point of the major story of the book about her friendship with Judy. I do want to discuss it. I don't know if you want to go on, if you can still go on about it.